there's two points that I would like to make this evening. One of them is historical, and the other is more practical theology having to do with what we're going through today. So the first thing is regarding the Last Supper. We sometimes assume that the Last Supper was a Passover dinner, because Jesus had, in fact, said to a couple of his disciples to go and get the donkey that was prepared for him and to get the room ready to celebrate the Passover. But if you'll notice, all of the passages that have to do with the Last Supper, there is no mention of lamb or bitter herbs or getting rid of the yeast in the house or anything like that that was typical of a Passover supper. So we have to look at the difference between a feast and a festival. A feast, obviously, is the Passover dinner itself, in this case. But a festival is all the celebration that lasts several days surrounding that one feast. And so this evening, we celebrate the beginning of what was called the Day of Preparation, which was a part of the festival, but not the feast. So Jesus was in the upper room, the room that they were going to eat the Passover feast in, if they had gotten that far. And they were having their first supper together. There would have been, somewhere between 15 and 20 people in the room. It was Jesus plus his disciples, which makes 13, plus Mary, his mother, plus Mary Magdalene, plus a couple of other women, and possibly a servant or two. We're not sure exactly how many were there, but it was more than just 12 or 13. So the kind of dinner that they were sharing is called a berakah, which is a special breaking of the bread that is enjoyed by the heads of families with their families on special occasions, and was enjoyed at that time in history by rabbis with their disciples. That's what this supper was. Jesus redefined for his disciples the meaning of the bread and wine that were shared at that meeting. And from that point on, every time the disciples got together, they would share this meal with one another. And it was in that way that they experienced the Lord in their midst. We know that it was not a Passover dinner because we know from other texts that the next day, when Jesus was hanging on the cross, from the noon hour to 3 p.m. was when the lambs were being sacrificed in the temple for the Passover dinner. Jesus then becomes our Passover lamb because he was sacrificed during that same hour. But obviously the people could not have a Passover meal until after the Passover lambs had been sacrificed. So one thing that sometimes confuses us is how the days are counted, because we hear about 3 days. If we do the math the way we do it in our 21st century minds, we think to ourselves, wait a minute, it was only 48 hours, or maybe not even quite that much. But that's not the way they counted days in the time of Jesus. You remember that a day starts at sundown and goes until the sundown of the next day. So today, beginning about this time, was the first day that we count in the 3 days of Christ being in the tomb or being dead. But it wasn't until 18 hours into this day that he was crucified. So he was crucified on the first day, but late in the first day. And then they had to sort of scramble, Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus and Mary and perhaps John and whoever else was there, had to scramble to get him down from the cross and get him into the tomb in time to be able to call it quits before sundown. But because no work was allowed at all on the Sabbath, especially a special Sabbath like Passover. And Pilate had given Joseph of Arimathea permission to take Jesus into his own tomb that evening. So that was, once the sun went down, that was the beginning of the second day. And at that point, Pilate told some Roman soldiers that they should go and seal the tomb and keep watch there. So they sealed it with wax and ropes, melted wax and ropes, so that it could not just be easily broken into without somebody knowing. And there were two guards posted to keep watch all night long. Then, of course, you have the one full day that Christ was in the tomb. That's an interesting day for us. It's a time when we don't understand how it happened, but it's a time in which Christ entered the gates of hell and the gates of death and actually conquered them and destroyed them so that we could be set free from those bonds which the devil had placed on us, even though it was our fault. We had to be set free from those. So that went until that second day went until sundown on Saturday, which is why we can celebrate an Easter Vigil Saturday evening, because that's actually the third day. That's the beginning of Easter, at sundown on Saturday. And the way the church has historically celebrated the Easter Vigil is to have the congregation keep watch in the nave for a couple of hours while the people who are being baptized are being baptized. Nowadays we do that kind of differently. And then at midnight, we try to time it so that it lands at midnight. At midnight, we proclaim the resurrection and begin the Eucharistic service for Easter morning. So, yes, it's very early on Easter morning, but it's still Easter morning. Anyway, I hope that clarifies things for you a bit. We think of days differently now than they did back then, but it all works. The second thing I'd like for you to think about is the fact that a Maundy evening service focuses on the mandatum, the new mandate that Christ gives us. I give to you today a new law, and that is that you love one another. That may seem pretty basic to us, but I would challenge you to think about how we do and do not love one another. Specifically in this time of facing the COVID-19 virus and the fact that tonight we were to have washed one another's feet. Well, physical foot washing is something that we can't do this evening. But there's something very important about that physical foot washing that we tend to let go. A lot of us don't like it because we're American. And we like to have clean hands and clean feet, and like to stay away from anything distasteful or smelly. And so I have noticed over the years, it varies from place to place, but that usually you're lucky if about half the people in the congregation come forward to have their feet washed and to participate in the foot washing. And I won't fault anybody for that. But I do want to point out that in the foot washing, two things are happening. First of all, the one whose feet are being washed is placed in a position where that which is ugliest and most distasteful and probably smelliest about them is exposed to another. The point is making ourselves completely vulnerable, and acknowledging the dirt, that we had accumulated by walking through the streets of this world. And then the second thing is the person washing their feet has to be willing to face that ugliness, to face that smelliness, to face that distasteful aspect of another person, and to not retreat from it with disgust, but to treat that ugly piece of that person with love, and to cleanse it, to make it more presentable to the world. I think the lesson there is obvious. And I always wonder sometimes what's going through the minds of people who refuse to come forward. Again, totally understanding the fact that this is distasteful. Maybe they have a disease on their feet that they shouldn't spread, and that's perfectly fine. In fact, I've withheld from it a couple of times for that reason. But if it's a matter of embarrassment, of not wanting to be vulnerable, and of not wanting to face what is ugly in one another, then I think we should challenge ourselves to get beyond that point. In the crisis that we are facing with COVID-19, I think that we're facing a similar moment to a foot-washing moment, where we don't want to wear masks, and we don't want to put on gloves, and we don't want to acknowledge that we have to be terribly careful and keep our distance from one another, either because we're afraid of the other person or because it implies that we ourselves might be a carrier of the disease, and that makes us ugly. Well, folks, I would say that in this day and age, the equivalent of washing one another's feet is to go the extra mile and be ugly. Put on your masks, wear your gloves, keep your distance. You think you're healthy, that's fine. Chances are you might not be, because we know from the medical professionals around us today that most of the people who are spreading the virus do not appear to have the virus. Perhaps that's a lesson to us regarding how sin behaves in our lives. We spread it easily from one person to the next, and we don't believe